everybody. This is Robin Gale, the coordinator of DARU and MC for the Champions of Change Strengthening Disability Advocacy Conference. Welcome to the seventh session of the conference, our final final concurrent session. I'm here to introduce Lauren Henley, who will be chairing this session, Tools for Making Change Happen. It looks like a lot of people were very interested in the Let's Talk About Sex session or the bullying session. Lauren aims for today to be quite a workshop-oriented group. That's why we're encouraging you to use the first couple of rows of tables so that we can do some small group work. So if you are on a table on your own, it would be good to join some others in a moment just to prepare you for that. But it's my pleasure to introduce to you Lauren Henley. Lauren is the National Policy Officer at Blind Citizens Australia. Lauren she was introduced to the world of disability through a car accident. Was it 6 years ago, Lauren?
Eight.
8 years ago, which led her to be totally blind. Lauren was also, and now I don't have my notes in front of me, so I'm going to get this title incorrect, Lauren, but Lauren was part of the Australian...
Youth Delegation.
Thank you. You say it.
The Australian Youth Delegation to the Conference of States Parties to the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. I've got no idea why you couldn't get that right, Robert.
I'm glad you said it. So Lauren has worked for Blind Citizens Australia since 2010, and she's led quite a few advocacy and policy-related campaigns for Blind Citizens Australia, and for that reason I think she's equipped today to deliver this workshop for you. I'll hand over now to you, Lauren. Thank you.
Great. Thanks for that, Robin. I've been asked to come and talk to you today about tools for change and how these can help you to achieve your advocacy goals. I'm a relatively new kid on the block. As Robin said, I lost my sight 8 years ago and I've been working in advocacy for around 7 years. And during this time, I've developed a passion for systemic advocacy work. Individual advocacy is also important and can help to drive systemic change. But my main interest is in the bigger picture and campaigning to influence change at a higher level. Everyone has a different approach to advocacy, and there is not necessarily a right and wrong. But there are some tips that can help you along the way, and I'll be speaking from my own experience as to what has worked well for me. To kick off this process, I'd like to provide you all with a handout. This fact sheet lists the questions that are essential to ask yourself when you are developing a campaign. So could I just ask Stephen to hand out that fact sheet to everyone, please? So while Stephen's doing that, I'll just move on. There's a list of questions on that, and I'll sort of be speaking to them throughout the afternoon session. So what you need to remember is these questions are all ones that you need to have answers to before you really get into the hard work of starting your campaign. But you might actually need to ask yourself these questions several times as your campaign progresses. That brings me to the very first point I'd like to make, and that's that you need to be flexible, changeable, and responsive to achieve success with a campaign. You can have a well-formulated strategy, but current news items, changes in government, lack of resources and many other factors may mean that your strategy will need to be adjusted. So campaign work is about more than just picking a plan and sticking to it. I've got an hour and a half with you all this afternoon, but I know that if I was sitting there for an hour and a half listening to someone talk, I'd probably be asleep by the end of it. So this afternoon we're going to be doing a bit of hands-on work as well. Robin's come up with a campaign goal for each table, which has been informed through the events of the conference. So throughout the sessions, I'll be getting you to work together to advance your campaign. So Robin, could I get you to go around to each table and just assign each table with a campaign goal to work on this afternoon?
Okay. All right. I won't talk on microphone for a moment while I just get everyone organised, Lauren.
Yep, sure. Good to go. All right, thanks for that, Robin. So now that you know what your goal is, let's go back to our second campaign question that's on the fact sheet I've handed out, which is, who else might be sympathetic to your cause? Are there other individuals, organisations or groups that might be able to support you? In my experience, partnerships can be one of the most valuable tools for change. Whether you are at this conference as an individual or representing an organisation, I can hazard a guess that you are in a position where you have access to relatively limited resources. So consider then that there may be other individuals or organisations out there who also have access to relatively limited resources, but who share an interest in working towards the same common goal. They may even be working towards that goal now, so why duplicate resources? When I was given control of Blind Citizens Australia's media access campaign back in 2011, I took the time to identify potential partnerships and established a working group consisting of representatives from Media Access Australia, Vision Australia, and the Australian Communications Consumer Action Network. These organisations all shared a common interest in advocating for audio description on Australian television. I'll be referring to that campaign a little bit throughout the afternoon, so would people like a bit more of an idea of what audio description actually is, or do you all know what it is? Okay, sure. So audio description is basically, so it's provided for forms of media like television, live theatre, DVD, we've got it in cinemas now, and it's sort of like the blind person's equivalent to captioning. So what it does is, obviously we can't see visually what's on the screen, so in between gaps in dialogue, there'll be a narrated voice that will give you details about things like scenes, settings, actions and costumes. And that's a service that's been available on television overseas in many other countries for a long time. So that's what we're campaigning for at the moment, and we've partnered with these organisations to do that. So is that sort of clear what audio description is? Yep, all right, great, thanks. Okay, so, as I say, the partnering with those organisations allowed for the sharing of ideas and strategies, the distribution of tasks amongst greater resources, and the ability to fund initiatives such as a postcard campaign that would not have been possible had we decided to pursue this matter alone. Remember, a problem shared is a problem halved. Okay, so it's time for the first activity. Each table will be working as a team. I want you to work out which potential partners you could approach. Think about who this campaign will benefit. Is it people with a physical disability? Is it people with a sensory impairment? Or another group of people, or it might just be people with a disability more generally. Try to think of groups or organisations who might have the same target group and greater resources that you can tap into. Now, the key here is not to get so many organisations on board that things become difficult to manage. A smaller group can be more effective because there are less personal opinions that need to be managed. It's just about choosing the right people. So use the internet if you want, if you have access to it, and try and identify three organisations who might be able to help you champion your cause. And then if you could have someone at the table write these three organisations down, that would be great. So you've got 5 minutes, and I'll let you get onto that now. And if anyone's got any questions and you're not quite clear on the task, just pop your hand up and Stephen will come around as well, and I'm happy to answer questions as we go. All right, that's time. If you haven't been able to come up with three, that's okay. We'll just work on what we've got. So what I'd like you to do now is, if I can please have a spokesperson from each table, I'll just get Stephen to go around to each table. And what I'd like from the spokesperson, I'd like to just hear your campaign goal as well as the names of the three organisations or any organisations you've come up with that you'd like to partner with.
Hi, Lauren. It's Karen Taranto here. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Thanks. So I am on a table with there's six of us here, and our campaign is around assistance animals, and it's around recognising their rights, raising awareness, breaking down the barriers that people who use assistance animals sometimes experience in accessing all sorts of areas. So Vision Australia has signed up to be a partner for this project, But so as Seeing Eye Dogs Australia in particular, we are aware of an organisation called Aware Dogs.
Okay.
Was that the question? Yeah. We just have those two at this stage.
All right,
we'll
great.
Keep going.
Thanks, Karen.
And Assistance Animals Australia.
Excellent.
Hello. Our task is, or our end goal, rather, is to get the Disability Discrimination Commissioner reinstated full time. So the three organisations we would like to work in partnership with are Federation of Disability Organisations, DANA, Disability Advocacy Network Australia, and First Peoples Disability Network.
Excellent. That's fantastic.
Hello. We've worked together on inclusive education. Our goal is so all students can go to mainstream schools with their peers. The three organisations that we identified to work with are STAR Victoria, DARU and DAV, Disability Advocacy Victoria. In particular, they already have established education groups.
Excellent. Thank you. Is that all the tables, or?
No. Our group is looking at young people in nursing homes and basically keeping them out of nursing homes. There's actually 7,000 Australians currently with high care needs that are in nursing homes that shouldn't be. So we would look at working with Young Care, which has been a really active NGO, and the Summer Foundation, and would also have to probably take on DHS or somebody in the government around housing supply and appropriate housing.
Great.
So our goal is to reinstate the Disability Commissioner position. So some of the partners that we thought of was our local MP, Peak Advocacy Body, and AFDO.
Excellent. I'm glad we've got two groups working on that because someone needs to be. Okay. So we'll move on to our second activity then. And what I want you to do is turn to the person next to you. And if this was one of your potential partners, what would you say to get them on board with your campaign? Take turns going over your sales pitch. This might sound like basic stuff, but communication can be a difficult thing. And it's absolutely essential. You need to be able to sell your idea from the beginning. Does this potential partner know about your organisation and what you do? What is it that you're working towards? What will the benefits be if you are successful? Will there be any flow-on benefits for the wider community? Why should the organisation you're approaching dedicate precious staff resources to this cause? And can you convince them that this partnership could be of benefit to them in some way? I'll give you 2 minutes, and that's for one person from each pair to try and bring the other one on board to help with their campaign. When time's up, we'll switch roles so that everyone gets a turn. So off you go. All right, that's 2 minutes. So if you'd like to stop there, and if the other people that haven't had a go at delivering their sales pitch yet would like to do that now. Yeah, sorry, just to clarify, you don't have to get up on mic and do this. It's just amongst yourselves, so. Robin scares a lot of people. All right, that's our 2 minutes up. So if everyone's had a turn at delivering their sales pitch, then we'll probably move on. So now that you know your goal and you know who your partners are going to be, the third question on our campaign questions fact sheet that I've handed out to everyone is, are there any examples of best practice, either in Australia or overseas, which demonstrate that what you are asking for can be done? So this basically means, are there other examples that you can point to say what we are asking for is achievable because it's already been done somewhere else? In our audio description campaign, for example, we will often refer to the fact that audio description has been available on television in many other countries, such as New Zealand, Canada, England and America, just to name a few, for many years. Google works well with finding out what's already around, but there's also another website that publishes examples of best practice on accessibility. The examples cover a wide range of issues and have been taken from all over the world. And the web address for that website is www.zeroproject.org. Really great website, and I would encourage anyone here to check it out if you're just looking to see what's happening around the world. Okay, does anyone need that web address again if you're taking notes? No? All right. Okay, great. So it's www.zeroproject.org. No worries. All right, so we'll move on to our next question, and this is where things start to get a little tricky, but it's not as scary as it sounds. What legal and regulatory frameworks already exist to help you advance this issue? Basically, this means, is there something in the law or in another formal document which can help you demonstrate that the people your campaign is directed at should give you what you want? In the disability arena, you have a few staples that you can apply to most campaign work. These are the Disability Discrimination Act, the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, and the National Disability Strategy 2010 to 2020. The Disability Discrimination Act is the federal act protecting people with a disability from discrimination. If you believe that someone is not upholding your rights as they are outlined in the Act, you can lodge a complaint with the Australian Human Rights Commission. And you can do this for any entity that is providing a service that can be accessed within Australia. The United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities is an international treaty which aims to uphold and protect the rights of people with disabilities. The Australian government has signed and ratified the convention, so is bound by the requirements set out in the convention. As is the case with the Disability Discrimination Act, complaints under the convention can also be lodged with and investigated by the Australian Human Rights Commission. Finally, the National Disability Strategy is the plan established by all Australian governments to implement the principles set out in the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities by the year 2020. I've developed brief guides for all three of the tools that I've just spoken about, and we're going to use these in our next activity, so Stephen's just going to hand out copies of those now. Sure, and you can also take those home with you for future reference. Okay, so the fact sheets that are being distributed outline the major sections of these tools that will be of most relevance to campaign work in Australia. Obviously, that's not an exhaustive list of what's in those documents, but they're the main points that I've picked out that will be useful for you to know about. So once everyone's got the fact sheets, what I'm going to do is I'll give you 10 minutes, and what I want you to do is go through the fact sheets and see if you can circle the specific sections that you think might apply to your campaign goal. So to give you an example, if I'm advocating for audio description on television, Section 24 of the Disability Discrimination Act, which speaks about goods, services and facilities, will apply to my goal. Section 30 of the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, which speaks about participation in cultural life, recreation, leisure and sport, also applies to my goal. And Outcome Area 1 of the National Disability Strategy, which talks about inclusive and accessible communities, also applies to my goal. Keep in mind that the National Disability Strategy in particular can really only be used to advance an issue that the government has control over. So depending on your campaign goal, you may not be able to use it. The UN Convention can still apply to private businesses and is good to reference in your campaign work, but similarly, if you go down the path of lodging a formal complaint under the Convention, you can only do this if your complaint is about an issue that is controlled by the federal government or an agency of the federal government. So I'll give you 10 minutes to go through and see if you can circle any relevant sections for your campaign, And I might come around as well during that 10 minutes. And, oh, well, actually, we've got roving mics, haven't we? So if you have a question, just pop your hand up and I'm happy to answer questions as we go along. All right, that's about our 10 minutes up. So how did everyone go with that? Was that okay? Did we come up with some sections that we might be able to use? All right, great. Most of them. All right, well, what we might do then, we might go around to each table, and if we want a spokesperson just to tell us just the name of each section, we'll be fine. We don't need to go into great detail. And what your goal is again too, because we may have forgotten. Thanks.
Okay, it's Karen again. So just to refresh your memories, our project is around assistance animals. And because assistance animals are recognised to be an aid to a person with a disability, a user of an assistance animal, we think that there are the DDA, the whole DDA, is relevant to raising awareness of their rights. And the UNCRPD, we thought that the whole document had something to do with assistance animals, but in particular accessibility, living independently and being included in the community, personal mobility, participation in political and public life, and participation in cultural, recreation, leisure and sport. Because of the way that assistance animals assist people to be independent and mobile in their community.
And as I say, that wasn't an exhaustive list of what's in the UN Convention, and there is actually a specific section in there on awareness raising. So that wasn't one of the ones I listed, but it is definitely important. I can't remember specifically off the top of my head what it was, but it's fairly early on, so I think it's about Section 7 or something like that. But if you were doing that campaign, definitely you'd want to look up the full document and find that specific section on raising awareness. So next table.
Hi. We spoke about so again, we're doing the reinstating the Disability Discrimination Commissioner. We discussed that the aged commissioner is now taking over that. We also all heard about Graeme Innes and how he spoke about in his role doing that role full time. He still didn't have enough the capacity to fulfil his position. So we feel that by giving this role to the aged commissioner means that more than a full-time role has been taken over and will be difficult to fulfil that role, and will be representing, a third of the entire Australian population. So that's people with disabilities and aged.
Okay. And so have you had a look then, because this is something that came up while I was at the United Nations in New York, and that's around national implementation and monitoring. So on the fact sheet on the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, you'll see Article 33 relates to national implementation and monitoring. So I would argue that the Disability Discrimination Commissioner is actually a measure of implementing the convention and making sure they're actually monitoring the way in which that's being implemented in Australia. So definitely I think that could be used as part of your campaign work.
Definitely, and we also spoke about the Nothing About Me Without Me.
Great.
And also on the NDES fact sheet, Outcome Area 2, Policy Direction 3, people having access to justice, because we feel there could be a waiting list and people may not be heard.
Mm.
And the other one was Outcome 4... Three. Universal personal and community support services are available to meet the needs of people with disability, their families and carers. So we felt that was relevant as well.
Excellent. Thanks.
Thank you.
Hello. We're looking at inclusive education. And in Disability Discrimination Act, education section 22, and then access to premises. Do you see that coming into? In National Disability Strategy, Outcome Area 1, Inclusive and Accessible Communities. And then Outcome Area 2, under that we have Policy Direction 1, Increase Awareness and Acceptance of the Rights of People with Disability. Remove societal barriers, preventing people with disability from participating as equal citizens. Policy Direction 3, people with disability have access to justice. And then Outcome Area 4, personal and community support. We thought that was very important on looking at a broad level. And Outcome Area 5, learning and skills. Policy Direction 2. Well, really all of those policies, aren't they? Yeah. All of those policies. And then Outcome Area 6, health and well-being, again, taking a holistic approach.
Okay, great.
And then on United Nations, Article 9, accessibility, Article 12, equal recognition before the law, Article 13, access to justice, Article 19, living independently and being included in the community, Article 22, respect for privacy, Article 23, respect for home and the family, Article 24, straight out education, Article 25, health, Article 30, participation in cultural life, recreation, leisure and sport, again inclusive of mainstream education and the broader impact, Article 33, and national implementation and monitoring.
Okay. That's really great. The only thing I would say, it's fantastic that so many of those things do apply to education, but what's difficult to see from those fact sheets too, because I've only included a very brief amount of information, is if you actually went to the UN Convention, for example, under education, it would list a whole heap of other things that you can use. So if you're, for example, writing a letter, then it's really hard to list absolutely all of those things that might apply to education, and it might be better just to focus on one, and you may find that once you read through all of what's in that article, it goes into a little bit more detail anyway, but really great work.
And it also, we also discussed about, like in Victoria, specifically the Education Department and Charter of Human Rights.
Yeah, and there's also the Education Standards 2005, which are referenced in the Disability Discrimination Act, but definitely for your campaign work, they would be of assistance.
How come I've got the microphone again? I think following on from the last group, we also found that pretty much you can apply most of the articles or standards from all of them, because there's all that sort of knock-on effect that if you're denied access to one thing, that it can impact others. So for people in young care, if you haven't got choice around housing, you might not also have choice around participation in social, cultural, political activities, or it could impact your health and other areas. So I think we picked quite a few, but particularly from the UNCRPD, the Article 19, living independently and being included in the community, and Article 23, which is respect for home and the family, because I think that's been an issue with young people in nursing homes, is that the family unit's often broken up. They're not living with their spouse or children, so
definitely,
that's a specific issue to them. The DDA has specific, standards around accommodation, but also access to premises, good services and facilities. So there's definitely probably things in all three of the policies we've got today that cover our area.
Great.
And we also had the same scenario as the table up the back, so to reinstate the Disability Discrimination Commissioner. So a couple of additional things to what they mentioned was under the DDA, so Section 29, Administration of Commonwealth Laws and Programs. Under the Convention, Outcome Area 2, Policy Direction 1 and 2, so increase awareness and acceptance of the rights of people with a disability and remove societal barriers preventing people with a disability from participating as equal citizens.
Excellent. All right, thanks for that, everyone. So we'll move on. And what I want everyone to keep in mind is that those tools are very important, but there's also some mainstream mechanisms that you might be able to use to advance your issue. For example, one of those three tools might be able to advance the issue of audio description on Australian television. And at the moment, we're specifically aiming to get audio description on the ABC. But there are some other ways that we might be able to address that separate from these three tools that we've just spoken about. And an example of that is the ABC has its own code of practice, which I could lodge complaints under. There's also various statements on the ABC's website about their commitment to providing accessible services and upholding human rights. So I might be able to draft a letter to the ABC's board of directors querying that. Sometimes finding out what else is around to help you progress a campaign might take a little bit of research. You can share it amongst your working group that you've established, or even see if you can approach a community legal centre or the Australian Centre for Disability Law to provide you with some advice on this. We don't really have time to go into that now, but it's something to keep in mind for future reference. All right, so we know the tools. We know which sections apply to your goal. Now, how can you put it into practice? Our next question on the fact sheets I've given you talks about strategy. There's no particular formula to this. It's what works for you and your campaign working group. I'm just here today to give you a few suggestions and tricks of the trade that might assist you in the future. The most ideal time to start a campaign, though, is generally around 10 months out from an election, because this is when you will get most traction with all parties in government. So let's say, for example, that the first port of call might be to seek a meeting with the minister whose portfolio aligns with your campaign issue, if it is that you haven't done this already. For example, to address the issue of audio description on television, I try and set up a meeting with the Minister for Communications. I might also set up a second meeting with the Minister for Social Services, who has an interest in disability issues, to see if he could offer some assistance in taking the matter further, or I could seek a joint meeting with both of these ministers. You should also try and develop a relationship with the shadow ministers covering the same portfolios, as they will be looking for things to boost their popularity and get them back into government at the next election. If you're trying to set up a meeting with a minister, you should have some specific dates in mind when you request a meeting. Always phone the office first, indicate who you are, where you're from, and what you would like to discuss with the minister. You'll often then be asked to put your meeting request in an email. You should include the dates you have in mind, information about your organisation if this is a first meeting, and information about the issue you would like to discuss. If you wish to have representatives from partner organisations attend the meeting as well, you'll need to indicate who would be attending, who they work for, and their role within the organisation. Okay, so you've now secured a meeting with the minister. You need to develop a briefing paper to provide to them, outlining the issue, the outcome you're seeking to resolve the issue, and what the benefits of this action may be. Keep in mind that parliamentarians are very busy people, and if you give them anything longer than one page, they simply won't read it. Make the document easy to read, with the main heading and basic subheadings, such as issue, solution, and benefits. Also try to use dot points underneath these headings so that your minister can quickly and easily see what you want. Include information about the relevant sections of the DDA, the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, and the National Disability Strategy, as well as any examples of best practice to demonstrate that there is a legal obligation for the other party to give you what you want, and to show that you know what you're talking about. You should also try to provide the briefing to the minister via email several days in advance to allow them to prepare for the meeting. So I've got a handout for you all, and it's basically just a briefing paper that I've recently prepared for a ministerial meeting. That one's not actually on audio description, it's on a different issue, but it really just gives you an idea of the sort of things you might like to think about including in your briefing paper. So Stephen, could I just get you to hand those ones out, please? And while Stephen's handing those out, does anyone have any questions just while we're sort of on the go? Or I'll just give you a couple of minutes to look over that anyway. And if you've got any questions about what's been included or how it's sort of set out, then feel free to ask and I'm happy to answer questions as we go along.
If anyone's got their hand up, can you shout out? Because I can't see you.
All right, so you've secured a meeting with the minister, you've got your briefing paper all sorted out, and you've sent it to them a couple of days in advance just to prepare them for the meeting. Now, what are you going to say to them when you get into the room? You shouldn't treat this like a rehearsed speech, and you shouldn't just read what's on your briefing paper because they've already seen it. You want to dress professionally, speak professionally, shake the minister's hand when you meet them, and aim to have a frank and honest conversation about the issue at hand and how it affects people with a disability, and also the steps that you can work towards to address it. Aim to have a few examples in mind that have not been included in your briefing paper so that you can draw on these during the meeting. And remember, you might be passionate about this issue, but don't let that get in the way of being professional, calm, and collected. Don't get angry or raise your voice, and try to build a rapport with the minister. If you're not yourself affected by the issue that you're campaigning about, maybe ask a few people that are affected by the issue to come along to the meeting to provide that direct consumer experience. But be careful who you choose and make sure that those people know what role they will be playing during the meeting. If there are extra people who you wish to invite along, you'll also need to notify the minister's office first to seek their approval, bearing in mind that they generally don't like more than about four people in the room at the same time, so you do just need to kind of limit it a little bit. All right, so you've met with the minister or ministers, but they can't assist you, or there might still be further steps that need to be taken in order to help you achieve your goal. If you're one person or even a group of people representing a broader group of people with disabilities, often the question will be asked, where are the rest of the people that are affected by this issue? Why aren't they complaining? Demonstrating consumer demands is an essential component of campaign work. The key is to try and mobilise the people that are affected by the issue to speak out and have their voice heard. Blind Citizens Australia, through the working group that we established to advocate for audio description on Australian television, coordinated a postcard campaign back in 2012. And that postcard campaign allowed Australians who felt passionate about having an audio description service on Australian television to direct a postcard to the Minister for Communications or the Managing Director of the ABC asking for an audio description service. That resulted in a total of 30,000 postcards being sent to those ministers. And granted, we didn't end up with a permanent audio description service, but it did demonstrate that the issue we were talking about was so much bigger than just us. There's other things you can do to demonstrate this consumer demand and put pressure on government, such as coordinating letter writing campaigns or social networking campaigns. You could also approach a parliamentarian and request that they ask a question involving the issue you're campaigning about during question time in the Senate. In my experience, the Greens Party has been quite sympathetic towards disability issues in this regard. You could choose to use several of these strategies at the same time. That will allow you to gain the most momentum, and you could delegate that workload amongst the working group that you've established with the partner organisations. Social networking in particular has the potential to create greater public awareness of an issue and may enable you to get a response from the powers that be much faster. It also allows for people affected by the issue to engage in the campaign with minimal effort. Now let's talk about complaints. Complaints have the potential to drive real systemic change and can be used in campaign work to achieve certain goals. You can also demonstrate consumer demand by lodging multiple complaints or by encouraging people to lodge their own. As an example, in 2009, Blind Citizens Australia lodged 9 complaints against 9 different cinemas throughout Australia that already offered a captioning service for people who are deaf or hard of hearing, but had refused to implement audio description. In 2010, in response to these 9 complaints and lobbying by other disability organisations, Hoyts, Village, Event and Reading Cinemas announced a joint commitment to roll out audio description as well as closed captions in all of their cinema complexes by 2014. And guess what? It's now 2014 and we have what we wanted. The complaints that were lodged made the Australian Human Rights Commission realise that accessibility in Australian cinemas was a bigger issue and that they needed to play a role in addressing it. And this is what led to such an effective outcome. This time around, we've gone one step further and lodged 29 complaints on behalf of individuals who are blind or vision impaired against the ABC for their failure to provide audio description on their television service. These complaints are still with the Commission at the moment, so that's about all the detail I can go into, but watch this space. Lodging a complaint is not as difficult as it sounds, and there's places you can turn to for support. Everything you need to know about lodging a complaint is outlined in Blind Citizens Australia's Guide to Using the DDA, which you can obtain a copy of by visiting our website or giving us a call at the National Office. I think those details should be included on the fact sheets you've got, but otherwise I'm happy to give those details at the end of the presentation. So if you're lodging multiple complaints as a part of your campaign strategy, you should lodge all of the complaints at the same time and include a cover letter indicating that as the issue is systemic in nature and is affecting a large number of people, you would like the assistance of the Commission and the Disability Discrimination Commissioner in investigating it. The Commission will then try to bring the parties involved in the matter together in a conciliation conference to talk about the issue and to try and work towards an agreed outcome. Although over 90% of complaints that are lodged with the Australian Human Rights Commission are resolved, you need to be prepared for what happens if your complaint cannot be resolved. We already learned about how important it is to build relationships. This also comes into play when you take a case to the Human Rights Commission. If your case with the Commission cannot be resolved, it will be terminated. From the date of termination, you then have 60 days to file the matter in the Federal Court of Australia. This isn't a long time, and court proceedings are very costly. And if you've left it until then to source legal representation, it might be too late. During conciliation at the Human Rights Commission, you want to try and convince the other party that if the matter did go to court, they would have a very high chance of losing. So sometimes sourcing pro bono legal representation in advance can be very, very beneficial, even at this early stage, and will give you some options to explore should your complaint be terminated. Public interest advocacy centres and the Australian Centre for Disability Law are a few of the places you can turn to for such assistance. For example, Blind Citizens Australia has a solicitor from the Public Interest Advocacy Centre in Sydney representing us in our complaints against the ABC. What you do need to keep in mind when lodging complaints on behalf of individuals is that they have a stake in what happens with the decision making around these complaints, and you need to regularly make contact with them to let them know what's happening with the complaint and ask their opinion in regards to the outcome that they are seeking. You need to ensure that everyone's on the same page because it's really important that all of your complaints are asking for the same thing. Any questions around any of that? No? Okay. Okay, so I'm a pretty big believer in putting pressure on from all angles. So just because you've lodged a number of complaints under one mechanism, like the Disability Discrimination Act, if you have decided to put those through the Australian Human Rights Commission, that doesn't mean that you can't start to pursue the same matter through another mechanism. It's about driving home the message that the problem is widespread and the people affected by it aren't just going to go away. This being the case, think about your subject and your final goal. Are the relevant industry standards, regulatory bodies, is a very big word, or guidelines that you could use in your campaign work, such as industry ombudsmans or ministerial departments? For example, I could also lodge complaints against the ABC with the Commonwealth Ombudsman if I had already contacted the ABC about the issue and they were not willing to fix it. These are a few tricks to keep up your sleeve, but our next question on our campaign questions fact sheet is about cost. You need to make sure that you know who is going to meet these costs that might be involved in order for your campaign to be successful. An example of this, if you're going to run a postcard campaign, you'll need to get quotes first to see how much it would cost. And if your organisation can't afford it, apply for a grant to fund it, or fundraise, then you can approach one of your partner organisations or someone else to see if they are able to assist. Blind Citizens Australia didn't have the financial means to manage the cost of a postcard campaign back in 2012, but by establishing a strong working relationship with another organisation, we were given the money needed. All right, so now that you know what funding is required, we can go to our next campaign question. What are you willing to negotiate on, if anything? It's good to know the minimum of what you would accept before you get into an important meeting or conciliation conference. For example, I want audio description on the ABC for at least 14 hours a week, but if they offer something lower, will I accept it just to get a permanent service up and running, which might be able to be built on later? Don't be afraid to take your time to respond to something if you aren't sure straight away, or to go away and think about it before agreeing to anything on the spot. Stay calm and show that you are professional and in control. So what I'll do now is give you 5 minutes, and just in your table groups, just have a chat about what you're asking for, and if you're actually in a conciliation conference, for example, or a meeting with the minister, and they put an offer on the table for you, but it wasn't really what you were wanting 100%, what points would you negotiate on? How could you sort of work with that? So if you just have a chat in your groups, then I'll give you 5 minutes to do that. All right, that's time up. Sorry, how did everyone go with that? All right, Stephen, what I'd like you to do, I just want to hear from one of the two groups that was working on reinstating the Disability Discrimination Commissioner. So can I have a volunteer from one of those two tables?
Hello again.
Hi.
What we decided is that, as Graeme Innes in his session explained to us that he couldn't achieve that role, as I explained before, we would actually ask for, when we went in for conciliation, what we'd negotiate was we'd firstly ask for either 1.5 or 2 positions.
Okay.
And then we may negotiate back to the one full time position.
Sure, so aim high to start with, and then you've got room for negotiation.
And we take Graeme Innes with us as well.
Okay, great. No, that's a great strategy. And so if, for example, what if they said to you, okay, well, look, we've found a little bit of extra funding, we can reinstate a commissioner, but it won't be a full-time role, it might be 16 hours a week. Had you thought about what you might do in that sort of situation?
Well, we thought we really wouldn't negotiate under the one full time, so we'd probably just keep campaigning.
Sure.
To try and get that back up.
Okay, great. All right, and I won't go around to every table, but if there's anyone that did just want to have a talk about, tell everyone what they were coming up with during that process, then I'm happy for you to do that, but otherwise we'll move on. So is there anyone that would like to speak?
It was just that we, having agreed with people on our side of the divide from the community, would provide the momentum and the heat around the campaign, and going into the responsible minister or minister's office would be setting of a target for them to agree to or to sort of respond to. So by 2025, we wanted to see the percentage of people who are inappropriately housed in aged care facilities drop to...
Yeah, sorry, is there a microphone somewhere?
Sorry, oh, yep. Thank you. How's that? That's better? Okay. No, it's not on. Hello?
Oh, that's better. Thanks.
Oh, it's directional maybe. It was just about making sure that we had a target in mind where we wanted the number of people who were inappropriately housed dropped by 2025. And that would give them the chance to come back, A, with a figure. And by all means, we would support that, because what it would mean, they'd agreed to the challenge in the first place that, A, there are people who are inappropriately housed and they needed to be reduced. And it may not be at the rate we wanted it, but at least there was a commitment to the problem, and then there would be an implementation and a transition strategy around the fact that they'd agreed to the proposition that there's a problem here, and it may not be fixed at the rate we wanted it to, but we can start and provide them with encouragement and support when they achieve those small victories. So that was part of our
Excellent.
Approach.
And so just to clarify, was your campaign goal the awareness raising of...
No, young people in aged care.
Okay, sure. Yeah, so it's not really a straightaway, this is what I want, this is a measurable outcome. You've really got to think about, what you can put in place to actually measure that performance.
Those who are in there already, what we can do about those people who have the option of getting out, if there's nowhere to go, that's another set, like an almost a different cohort from making sure the numbers reduce over time. It's getting help for the people who are already there, so...
Okay, excellent. Anyone else would like to speak?
We're talking about inclusive education. We talked about probably we would be unwilling to compromise, because we've all known the situation where children will be provided with support person for 3 days a week, and this is very disruptive for children if they're then having to go to two different schools or two different sets of friends, two different environments. So then we talked about, like, also being prepared going into that meeting, knowing that that situation might arise.
Definitely.
And
that's
having
what
it's about. Having our research and our arguments ready and prepared that that scenario could come up, to, I guess, knowing that all different scenarios could come up and knowing where we're going to go, and then knowing that, okay, we'll have a backup plan, I guess. We'll take the campaign in another direction and come in and try from another avenue then.
Great. And anyone else? No, Stephen?
No, it looks right. Like that's it.
Great, okay. So we're down to our last campaign question. What if things don't go according to plan? So that basically means that you need to think about what measures you can put in place to ensure you don't lose traction if a particular strategy doesn't work. I mentioned one of these earlier when I spoke about sourcing pro bono legal representation, because it's about saying, okay, if these complaints are terminated, do I have an option to take it to the federal court, or is there another strategy that I could use to try and get the outcome I want? Likewise, if seeking a meeting with the minister, and they don't give you what you want, you need to have already considered what you will do next, so you don't lose time. For example, if all of Blind Citizens Australia's options fail, with the complaints currently lodged with the Australian Human Rights Commission, we're looking at lodging complaints against the federal government under the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities at the international level. And this would be for their failure to include minimum targets for audio description within the Broadcasting Services Act, because this same act already requires television broadcasters to provide a very high level of content with captioning for people who are deaf or hearing impaired. All right, that's all of our campaign questions. So I'll open up to the floor for any questions that you've got in regards to my presentation today. And so I'll just check time. Yeah, so we've got probably about 5 minutes for questions, 5 to 7 minutes, and then I'll just come back with a few closing remarks.
No hands up as yet?
No hands up, all right.
There's one.
Okay. No question. All right. Well, what I might do then.
Is that any better? Now, just Lauren, if you had a view on one of the campaigns outside of this sort of space I've been working on is relation to educational provisioning, and part of our methodology is to provide questions in advance around that electoral cycle to all the candidates in a local area and promise to publish the answers. And that's been quite effective in the past because they know that we know, and they know that the other candidates know, and it forces some fast policy decision-making around what they actually are going to say they're going to do, and knowing that it will be published and everyone's answers will be published is quite a good...
That's great.
..provide some encouragement for them to get their minds on the job.
And that's, you know, that's probably what we can do for the next 5 minutes. It sounds like a lot of the people in this room already have a lot of experience with this sort of work, so... if you've got some tricks of the trade up your sleeve that you'd like to share with everyone that's here today, then feel free to put your hands up and we'd love to hear them.
Yes, another question here.
Probably for less important than government things, getting local newspapers in the know and getting your story across can work wonders.
Mm, definitely. And again, you know, you can do that with social networking, but yeah, letters to the editor, all of those things. And I'm not sure if people heard about one of the recent media stunts that Graham Innes had done. He was in Brisbane for a conference and found that the audio tactile signals on the traffic lights were turned off at 9 p.m. So for someone that's blind, that's not really a safe situation. And he got onto the media straight away, and now that's been fixed. So yeah, that really does demonstrate the power of media.
One more question.
Hi, Lauren. My name's Susan Arthur. I work at Reinforce, and I've just started my own little self-advocacy group, which is still auspiced by Reinforce because we don't have any funding as yet, and I'm hoping that we will get funding one day, but anyway... That's in the future, I think. My new self-advocacy group is called Powerful Parent Self-Advocacy Group. And what we're doing is we're what my end goal is that parents will be able to keep their children at home with the support they need, rather than at the moment the government says, right, you've got an intellectual disability, you're only mildly impacted, but this could still impact on a child, so we will remove the child. Right. And I don't believe that this is right. It also interferes with the UN.
Most definitely.
So I brought this up to reinforce us that I was aware, not because I know of, but because I've heard on the grapevine there's people involved. But unfortunately, like I was, too many people are too scared, especially once they've been involved with child protection. They're too scared to stand up and say, I've had that happen to me, can you help me? They're scared of what might happen to the child if the child's still young. They're scared that they might lose any access they've already got if they all of a sudden start fighting. And they're scared from that, from word go, really.
Okay.
So what I started with were knowing that about myself, because, you know, if someone told me there was a powerful parenting group, I would have told them good luck, because I was not very sort of into the frame of mind of advocating when I was about to lose my daughter. So I know how they're feeling. So I thought the best way for me to get this going is sort of started as a self-advocacy group, but also call it a support group and get the parents who are involved in the group first. Then say, right, okay, guys, this is not only my group, this is your group. What action do we want to take?
That's a fantastic strategy, because we spoke about earlier making sure that you've got that consumer experience and that you're really driving people that are affected by these issues to speak out. And if you're setting up peer support opportunities, then it's good not only for those people in, you know, just talking through some of the issues involved around that, but it's a great way to get into the advocacy work down the track. So I think that's a fantastic strategy. Anyone else?
What, another question?
Hi, my name is Christine. I work for Darabin Council. So it's not necessarily a question, but was just raising information, I suppose, for people. Most, if not every, local council annually has a community grants. So that's possibly an opportunity for funding for groups to apply for. Local councillors also are an avenue to raise issues, particularly if it's a local issue, but they can also take it up to their local MP. So councils have council meetings, and you can also, you know, request to be able to communicate and meet with your local councillors at any point in time. And each council is legislated to have a disability action plan, which is their commitment to disability access and inclusion from a local perspective. So it's also a way, I suppose, of connecting with your local council and finding out what they're doing for the local community, and bringing that to the attention of the council and saying, you know, you've stated in your plan that this is what you will do. How have you actually put that into practice?
Yeah, thanks so much for bringing that up, because we've spoken about some of the tools for change today, but there's so many out there, and especially at the local level, there's some great ones that you've mentioned, so thanks for sharing that with us today. That's about all the question time that we have, so yeah, I hope you've enjoyed the session, and it sounds like you're all pretty experienced, but maybe you took something else away from it as well, which is my hope. I began campaigning for audio description on television back in 2011. It's now 2014 and we still don't have audio description on Australian television, but that in itself isn't necessarily a failure. We're getting closer to our goal every day, and as long as you remain passionate, determined and do not give up, your time will not be lost. Thank you.
Hi, it's Robin. I just want to say thank you very much, Lauren. I hope I speak on behalf of everyone here, but I've got to say I was pretty impressed by this workshop today. And I just went out to the registration desk and I said to Natasha, it's such a shame that the rest of the conference didn't get to participate in this workshop, and we could have put it on earlier on in the conference and maybe got more people, because I think what Lauren has illustrated today was perfect. She interwove into the presentation an actual strategy that's being used by her organisation, and then also provided resources for you guys, and we all got to work together. And I think that's a really great way to work with people who work in the area of advocacy. I hope you agree with me, because I was very impressed.
Thank you.
Well done, Lauren.
Thanks.
Afternoon tea, and then let's go to the River Room for what's going to be a really fun finale session with First Dog on the Moon.